Putting the Scat in Eschatology. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
All right, folks, we're moving along. Thanks for tuning in. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We have over 100 countries listening in at this particular moment. Hello to each and every one of you. It's time for our God Blogger. This week's God Blogger is Peter Enns. He's one of the Patheos guys. patheos.com/blogs/Peter ENNS. If you'd like to find that information, go to our website and look under Next Show, which is today's show. With a BS in Behavioral Science, a Master's of Divinity, and a PhD from Harvard in Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations, Peter has taught at Westminster Theological Seminary, at Harvard University, Princeton Theological Seminary, Fuller Theological Seminary, Lutheran Theological Seminary, Biblical Theological Seminary, Temple University, and Eastern University. He is currently on the faculty at Eastern. I think that's Tony Campolo's place. Is that not right, Peter? Peter, are you at...
You bet. Yeah, it Tony. Sure is.
So we won't hold that against you. Buddy, can you convince him to trim his ear hair? That is unbelievable. I'm just... tell him,
you
please.
You know, we're working on that, but, you know, you got to be careful how you approach people about things like that.
Those Italians, those older Italian guys, I tell you, it's like... it's like Lord of the Rings in his ears. Your academic interests include Old Testament theology, biblical theology, wisdom literature, New Testament's use of Old Testament, Second Temple literature, good night, the general issue of how ancient scripture intersects with modern thought, blah, 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 blah. But what everyone really needs to know is that he is a fan of The Simpsons, of The Office, and of the New York Yankees.
Okay, that's good. That last part was good because you made me sound very boring for about 5 minutes there.
Man! That's some serious. I actually had someone post us a tweet or something and said, "Wow, you've got Peter Enns and somebody else whose name I can't find right now. Alistair McGrath on the same show. McGrath, are you guys different in your headspaces?"
Well, I mean, yeah, we're just different in terms of our interests and disciplines. I mean, Alistair's more of a theologian, historian. I'm more of a biblical scholar and. I just think our context, British context versus American context, we tend to have different issues we want to talk about. So, I mean, different headspaces. I hope we don't occupy the same headspace.
No, it's kind of weird. Kind of weird. I had someone post on our Facebook page, which is why we've got you on our show today. They said, you got to check out this blog. I think you'd like this, Drew. And the one they showed me was Why I Don't Believe in God Anymore.
Yeah.
And I think I need to get you to explain to our listeners what the heck you're talking about, because that was a good tease.
Okay, well, the heck that I'm talking about is that, first of all, see, my blog is about trying to rethink biblical Christianity for, let's call them disaffected evangelicals, those who have a heritage and an upbringing in that context. But, you know, the older they get, the smaller the world gets, the whole nine yards, they... those old ways of thinking don't have much explanatory power for them in how they look at the world and explaining the world that they live in. So, something like this, Why I Don't Believe in God Anymore, believing in God is something that's usually stressed very much in a lot of conservative Christian contexts, especially in America. And believing, that's a fine word, but believing, it almost is like a synonym for thinking. Like, do you believe in God? Yeah, that means, I have thoughts in my head about God. Or, do you believe in Jesus? Yes, I believe in Jesus. Do you believe you're going to heaven? Yeah. But the Bible really calls people regularly to trusting God, which is a much more difficult thing than believing. Believing gives you sort of a safe distance in a sense. Trusting, you got to put your whole self out there. It's risky.
What happens if you don't want to do either?
Well, that's up to you. I mean, I'm just saying for those people who are in that sort of quandary, I'm not trying to conquer the world here with my blog post. I'm speaking to a specific audience, I'll be solving the national debt next week.
Yes, and Jeter's issues, all of Jeter's issues. That should be your next post.
I'll think about that. Okay, I may do that.
Yeah,
all right.
That'd be good.
Yeah, okay.
Here's another one we want to bring up here. If they only knew what I thought, the sad cycle of evangelical biblical scholarship. What? Really, there's a title here that is probably a little more concise, and it's not just for scholars anymore. We're talking about outgrowing evangelicalism. I mean, there's another one I want to throw in at the same time because I think they're all probably tied in. The deeper scandal of the evangelical mind, we are not allowed to use it. Are you saying that the vast majority of evangelicals have checked out?
No, I think that there is the process, though, of I think people who are probably consider themselves post-evangelical and are moving on to different kinds of things. They acknowledge the heritage, but moving to, you know, Eastern Orthodoxy or just sort of nothing, you know, spiritual, but no, they don't want to be affiliated with any movement. And, you know, I can't blame them. There are a lot of issues in America with the history of evangelicalism, but I don't think they're checking out. I think they're looking for language, and they're looking for models that they can follow to say, listen, you don't have to stay in that way of thinking, in that paradigm, in that model, if it doesn't make sense to you, and God's okay with it. He's not going to be angry with you if you're thinking.
It's interesting, though, that you have to, or that this discussion even has to take place, because that is, in and of itself, an indicator that what evangelicalism, not what they're teaching, but how they're teaching it.
Yes.
Is dangerous and incorrect and not healthy if you have to say, hey, it's okay, God will be fine if you're not an evangelical anymore.
Right, well, and it's okay to question the evangelical system from within.
Yeah,
That's where people have problems. Well, the thing is, you know, just, you know, very briefly, we have to remember that evangelicalism grew out of fundamentalism in the early part of the 20th century, and it was designed as a protectionist movement against sort of liberal movements in the 19th century. This is a boring history lesson, but this is really important because there's a sociological dimension to evangelicalism. It's not just thinking. It's we've made our bread and butter by protecting boundaries, by making very clear boundaries.
Yep.
And it's very clear when you're in or out.
Yeah. No, you say that quite spot on. I remember watching a documentary about hell. What was it called? Remember that one, Tim, where we had Buddy on?
Hellbound,
yeah. Did you see that?
With Miller, right? Is it Ken Miller?
Yeah,
I've seen that. I've heard a podcast of his, too.
Yeah, so, very, very good stuff. And and there's a clip on there of my friend Paul Young who says something like, you know, look, this is threatening stuff because, and then the question is why? Well, because there's money behind this. You know, there's salaries involved in this.
Absolutely.
There's a tribal code involved in all of this, questioning the hell stuff, you know. So.
Right, exactly. But you know, that's where the conversation is. And what I'm trying to do is sort of create a culture, at least on the fringes of evangelicalism, where there's a culture of conversation where you can actually talk about things like this simply because you feel it's important to talk about without fear of repercussion. The problem is that some of the better minds within evangelicalism that want to talk about this, they can't always do that precisely for the reason you said. There's an income involved, and they're teaching in places.
Yeah.
And I've had many conversations with people like this, my extended colleagues. I know what they think. I know what they would like to say. I know where their intellect and their training and their heart leads them to talk, but they can't. They have to remain silent.
That's pathetic.
And it's dysfunctional. I mean, the thing is, that's not just a property of evangelicalism. I think any system of thought has that, but this is my world, you know, and I want to speak into that and try to, again, be a part of just one of many, many people trying to create a different kind of culture where we can honor our past, but without fear.
Yeah, without fear of being body slammed by Mark Driscoll.
You know. Right, yes, that's true. Or it's even deeper than that, without fear of God being displeased with you for asking questions.
Yeah.
And I think that's a deeper psychology of evangelicalism, which has been ingrained into them through teaching. And again, I don't want to be sweeping because there are always exceptions. There are pockets of evangelicalism that are, I think, very, very healthy. But mainstream gatekeeping evangelicalism isn't.
We're on the phone with Peter Enns. He has a Papa Has Dough from Harvard. And he writes at Patheos is where his stuff is at. Peter, and then it's ENNS. Peter, can you explain to me what the problem is with God slaughtering women and children? Why is that an issue? I think he should be able to do that anytime he wants.
Well, that's what some people think, and apparently you and I are not going to get along on this issue. So, No, you see, this is the three hot issues today in evangelicalism are homosexuality, the violence of God in the Old Testament and hell, which is sort of related, those last two.
Yeah.
But, you know, the violence of God, there are a lot of episodes in the Old Testament where God's preferred means of conflict resolution is to slaughter people, or it's a way of keeping purity. It's simply what you do in an ancient tribal world, which is where the Old Testament is set. It's an Iron Age tribalism from 1200 BC down to about 500 BC, and that's how people rolled at that time. And so you have God being described in those terms. And you get to the New Testament and Jesus, and, you know, there's wrath in the New Testament, don't get me wrong, and God, there's anger, but, you know, Jesus doesn't say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go over there, we're going to kill those people and take their land, and we're going to kill all the men, women, and children. He says, you know, you've heard it said, love your neighbor, hate your enemies. This is the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew. But Jesus says, I'm telling you, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, which is the Romans, that's where they're living. And it's a profound shift it's a tectonic shift in what it means to follow God well. I mean, we can't lose sight of what Jesus is saying there. He's saying, I'm telling you how to follow God. I'm telling you the heart of God. Don't kill each other. Don't kill other people to take their land. Right? Oh. That's all over the Old Testament.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know what? That topic, that is actually something I'd like to have you back on our show to talk about in its entirety, because, as you said, it really is one of the bigger issues.
Well, I'd love to. I mean, I think that's a very big topic, and I think it's a question I get a lot.
What's the most frightening verse in the Bible for you, at least?
The most frightening verse is in one of the letters of John, 1 John, which basically says, I'm roughly paraphrasing to get the real point across, that no one's ever seen God, but if we love one another, that's the closest people get to seeing God.
You know what? Can I just react before you tell me what your point is behind that?
Go ahead.
My reaction to that is, like, I've been struggling with the absence of God in my life, and I opened up about it 3 years ago, and I've been talking about my crisis of faith. And the number one pushback I get from everyone is, well, you know, just when people love you, that's God loving you. And I want to slap them for that, because that's just lame. I want a Charlton Heston moment, right?
Yes, yes. Well, we all do.
Yeah.
I totally sympathize with what you're saying, and I wouldn't use that verse to speak to your context, because in the context of that letter, there aren't people that are having faith crises.
Okay.
See, it's more the context of the church, where people in church don't get along very well. And you say to them, listen, do you understand how fundamental it is to love God? This is the closest you get loving each other in the church, who are the people you tend to hate the most, you know, because they irritate you.
Yeah.
So those are the people that you love the most, and when you love them, that's when you see God, and that's as close as you get, folks. Your situation is different. And I'm not unfamiliar with it personally, and that's another thing that people want to talk about, that God doesn't make sense to them very much, and I want to talk about why, and there have to be channels open in the churches to talk about that, not outside some place.
Well said. Yeah, because I've not been allowed to develop a doctrine of doubt.
Well,
I've certainly not been encouraged to
read the Bible. You know, read half the Psalms. You know, the psalmist is having a bad day.
Yeah.
literally half the Psalms. The book of Ecclesiastes is a wonderful, wonderful book. Can I plug a commentary I wrote on Ecclesiastes?
Oh, that would be great.
I wrote it for Erdmans. It came out about a year and a half ago. But, you know, Ecclesiastes is basically a book where this author, the entire world is crumbling around him. And you know why? Because God set it up this way.
Yeah.
He's not happy. And that book is in the Bible. And the resolution at the end is not, and here's how you solve it. The resolution is basically, well, it's like Churchill said, when you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah.
Right? Don't stop. You have to keep walking, keep walking, keep walking. That is the paradox of faith. That doubt is an integral part of it. and you have to keep going even when it doesn't make sense. That's the childlike surrender to God.
Beautiful. Well, very well said. Yeah. We've got to get, I really, really enjoyed having you on our show, and I'm sorry to cut your time so short, but Peter...
Sure, not a problem, yeah.
Peter Enns, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to find out more about him, go to the patheos.com, that's P-A-T-H-E-O-S.com website. Type in his name, Peter, E-N-N-S. Follow his blog. He is a one of the smarter ones out there, ladies and gentlemen. I really appreciate it, man. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Drew. Maybe another time, too. Right?
Definitely, definitely. If you ever got a book to flog or keychains or coffee mugs or something, you call me, okay?
Okay, you got it.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Yeah,
bye-bye. All right, short break on our show, folks.